Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Round 4 of the U.S. Open is underway. You got a bunch of guys on the course, but the leaders, the guys at the top of the leaderboard, won't tee off for another couple hours, as a matter of fact. They're here to give us a read on the tournament to this point, and specifically going into the fourth and deciding round, is the best golf analyst I know. If you've been watching the Golf Channel in the mornings to get ready for the day, you've been catching him hosting down there. And he joins us now from the Golf Channel and his syndicated show, Fairways of Life, Matt Adams. How are you, M.A.?
Jody Mack, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate you coming on. Before we get into the specifics here of round number 4, I need your take on how the USGA prepped, planned, prepared Pebble Beach this week. Did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? Did they try and hedge their bet? What's your read on what the course has been for the first 3 days of the U.S. Open?
My read is they got it right, which was the first option that you gave me, but it also came from hedging bets, because part of it is Pebble Beach is Pebble Beach. There's only so much that you can do to a seaside golf course. It's hard to screw it up the way you can a course that's, say, inland. So the USGA did a good job of not over-engineering, not overdoing the golf course, but the easiest course to set up for a U.S. Open is probably Pebble Beach. So it's kind of a combination of things. They did do a graduated rough. There were a couple of fairways where players were complaining early in the week, and they graduated it a little bit more. So they're being reactive. They're being sensitive to the fact that they've had some stumbles over the past few years. But full credit to them this year in 2019. Everybody seems to be saying, and I happen to agree, that the setup for this U.S. Open is an A.
Okay. Not everybody says that, because yours truly disagrees. And I'll give you my...
What do you disagree about, Jody Mack?
I'll tell you. What number U.S. Open is this?
119.
All right, Mr. Golf Expert. How many times in the 119 years of the U.S. Open have we had a player shoot double digits under par?
Well, in the last 15 years, it's happened multiple times. We've had multiple rounds that have ended at 16 under par, including one Tiger Woods and including Brooks Koepka. So it's happening. What you're referring to, not to take away from your answer, but what you're referring to is the fact that the U.S. Open, as compared to the other three major championships, if you took the other three, right, the PGA, the Masters, the Open, vastly different setups, vastly different golf courses. Over the last 15 years, those three majors, believe it or not, I'm going to blow you away with this stat, they've all come in between 10 and 11 under par. For all the variances, they've all come in between less than a stroke apart over the course of 15 years. The U.S. Open is the one glaring difference, coming in at just over 3 under par. Now, for the national championship of the United States, I have no problem whatsoever if it is the most difficult, stern test of golf you can possibly have. Where the problem lies is when a golf course is over-engineered, you are no longer identifying the best golfer on the golf course. You're identifying the golfer that's not most stricken by a cruel twist of fate, where they would take collars of rough like they did at Oakmont and put them in places that the architect never designed them to be, because they're trying to protect the score against a standard of even par, which went out from the best players in the world 15 years ago. So that's where I'm coming from, is saying, right now, at the end of this week, you're going to know who the best player was this week. And in prior U.S. Opens, when it was over-engineered, you're never really 100% sure.
Okay. I will, again, go back to the number that I quoted. Only 9 times in the 119-year history. Of those 9, 7 came 2 years ago in 2017, where seven guys went under par. Koepka won at 16. Hideki shot 12. Brian Harman shot 12. Fleetwood was 11. Schauffele was 10. Haas was 10. Fowler was 10. Only two other times. Rory McIlroy at Congressional shot minus 16, and Tiger at Pebble Beach shot minus 12 now 19 years ago. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. So you had 1 year where you had 7 out of 9, and in the other 118 times, you had two guys go under 10. I think they're getting three today. I think you're going to see three guys shoot double digits under par by the end of the day. That tells me, I'm sorry, the course is too easy.
No. What it's telling you is that for the last 20 years, their setups have been wrong. The USGA will admit this themselves. They said at Shinnecock last year, we let it go too far. So they've learned from those errors. They realize that you cannot over-engineer a golf course or you would truly not identify the best player. So what you're referring to is Erin Hills, which was a public access golf course with massive fairways, and as a result, you had players shoot incredible scores. The bottom line is the U.S. Open's the only one that seems to care what the score is instead of identifying who the best player is until perhaps this year at Pebble Beach, where they let the majesty of this golf course be. They still shifted some fairways like number 8, second shot at number 8, that's where you have to hit the second shot over the huge chasm into the ocean. And they shifted the fairway right. So instead of a second shot of being 160 yards, it's more like 190 yards, and you have to carry it over the water to get it close. I like what they've done. I think they have finally found the balance that it is about what the best players in the world do, not about trying to protect something that is more ego-related, that is not in keeping with any semblance of reality at all.
All right. Well, I think that having it be a really tough test is a good thing. And I think they made it easier this year.
I agree with you on that. I just think tough and the fine line between tough and unfair were crossed too often.
Yeah, they've gone unfair. I'll agree with that. They've sometimes, yes, and I think it's probably ego-driven, that they want guys in plus numbers to win the U.S. Open, which we don't need to see. But when you're going to have three guys at double digits under par, it's going to be like Erin Hills a couple of years ago, which I thought was also mishandled.
One thing you got to understand, though, they've had this marine layer all week, and there's nothing the USGA can do about that. They've had no wins. If you've got a
seaside
golf course without wind that's short, it's going to have none of its defenses on there. And this marine layer has just hung all week. So it stayed cool, it stayed wet, it stayed damp. What do you get with that? The ball doesn't compress the way that it normally does. The air is heavy, so it's not going to fly through as much as it normally does. And even when it's cool, you get the likes of, say, Tiger Woods, that has admitted that he said, you know what? What hurts? Everything hurts. When it is cold and damp like this, especially a guy with the miles and the chassis that he has, it's hard to move. So golf's an outdoor game. If they could play it in the dome, they would have made the fairways and greens so hard that you would have had a U.S. Open in terms of scoring that would have been closer to what you're talking about because of the players' abilities to control the ball, and yet still have a golf course that from a setup standpoint is fair.
Well, I do think the USGA went a little soft. Mother Nature has gone soft on them as well and made it easier to play. We'll agree on that. All right, let's get to the actual tournament.
Right.
First hour of the show today, I said, well, we've established now it's the year of the newbie. The St. Louis Blues won their first ever championship. The Toronto Raptors won their first ever championship. Gary Woodland, Ches Rive, Chesson Hadley, Matt Kuchar, a little bit of reach. I'm going down a good couple of strokes now here. Which of the newbies has the best chance to win?
I love the way you described all that. You know what's unbelievable about what you just described? To think that the way you just framed that has happened within 1 week.
Yes.
Can you think of another time of year where we have three national championships that will conclude in 1 week? Is there?
Probably. It's probably happened before, but to have first-time winners, I can pretty much guarantee you that's never happened. And I know Justin Rose and Louis Oosthuizen and Brooks Koepka are going to try and keep that from happening. But is Gary Woodland good enough to be a first-time winner? You and I exchanged some texts before it got underway. I know you kind of like Woodland. You thought his game was going to fit this course.
Didn't I tell you that before the tournament even started when you
yes,
asked me?
Yes, you did. That's what I just said. You and I exchanged texts before the test. You gave me your top five and you chalked it up. And then you gave me outsiders who can actually have a chance. And Gary was certainly one of them. I give you props. Matt Adams from the Golf Channel, our guest, was on. And then I heard a phone dialing in the background and boom, Puffy was gone. Despite the fact that he thinks I hung up on him, that is not the case. I did not hang up on him. But we have reestablished his line. Thank you, Matthew, for rejoining us. And just so you know, Matt knows and everybody else knows, here's a text he sent me. I told him I liked Jason Day. He told me Jason's form was not good, didn't necessarily like him this week. He said, here are my top five, DJ, Brooks, Rory, Jordan, and Tiger. Kind of chalked it up on his top five. But then he said, long shots, Oosthuizen right there. Finau didn't make the cut. Kuchar right there. Canley, a little disappointment. Rose, who's in second place. Shoffley's only okay. Dark horse. After naming 12 guys on the 13th, he gets to Gary Woodland, who sits on top of the field and was 125-1 to start this week. I'd say, all in all, that was pretty good predicting by Matt Adams. Who's disappointed you most out of those that you liked? If you're proud of your Woodland pick, and you should be, DJ with the way he's played, Tiger... Finau not even making the cut. Who's been the biggest disappointment?
I mean, obviously, I think you have to say it's Tiger, don't you? Because Tiger, everybody's so emotionally tied up in, and Phil, to a certain extent, everybody's emotionally tied up in because he was trying to go for the career Grand Slam. So I think from a standpoint of using the word disappointment, I think that they were the two that if they were knocking on the door, if they were in contention, it would make this one of the most historic U.S. Opens ever. But as it is, we got Gary Woodland, and before you hung up on me, what I was saying was that Gary is one of the leaders on tour in total driving, which means length and accuracy. So the reason why I put him on that list with you is that I knew that coming in, he wouldn't have to hit driver everywhere around here. And the more loft you have on the club, the longer the club is on the face, the more you control you have of it. And what happened, which I didn't know was going to happen, but it has with him, is that he came in 150th on tour in strokes game putting, and he's one of the top in strokes game putting so far this week. He's actually third coming in today, picking up seven strokes on the rest of the field. That is absolutely massive. He's got an interesting story, I have to tell you, too, Jody Mac, does Gary Woodland. In 2017, his wife, Gabby, due with twins. They lose one of the twins in childbirth. The other boy, they had to watch it very closely. The other baby boy was born. I had a chance to ask him how that experience changed him, and he said, one, it's matured him as a man in life and in golf in every way, and two, when he comes home and he looks in that baby's eyes, he knows that baby doesn't care what he shot on the 18th hole. So it's changed his perspective to golf and life, and he said a really cool quote. He said, I'm no longer searching. Which I thought was, and I didn't ask him what he meant by that in terms of, again, golf for life, because I thought it was so profound. I just let it lay there and let it be what it is. But I just thought that was really cool. I'm no longer searching.
And he's had a great season. Well, shoot, he's actually recaptured his career since 2017. He's become a competitor on the tour again. It's been a long time. It's been years since he's won his last match, but he hadn't been a factor over the last several years, but he has been this year, and we now know the backstory as to why. How much of an advantage does a guy like Rose have over him today? Because Rose has been there, done that, had the lead in a major on a Sunday. Woodland has never been in this situation before. How much of an advantage for Rose because of experience?
The interesting thing about Justin Rose is when he won the U.S. Open in 2013 at Marion, he was 133rd on tour in strokes gained putting. This year, he's 11th. The difference between then and now is both in terms of where he put his focus, where he put his concentration. It also has to do with the equipment and the putter that he is using. And it's a profound turnaround. What's not been working for Justin Rose this week, however, is the proficiency that he normally has off the tee and from the fairway. He's a brilliant ball striker normally. So Justin Rose has been saying all week, if my ball striking comes back to even the average of what I expect, watch out, because the putting and his ability to get up and down has been like Houdini so far this week. So that's where the advantage lies. If he is able to find the Justin Rose that hasn't shown up yet, that's still contending and only one stroke behind, then it's going to be real trouble for Gary Woodland. If he continues to play the way he has so far, I think it's going to be a really good battle. I'd still give the edge to Gary Woodland.
How much does it play those two in the final pairing, having to watch Mr. Koepka do what he's going to do right in front of him?
Well, the interesting thing about Brooks Koepka is that if you look at Brooks Koepka's scoring so far in the week, he is 7 under par on the front nine. Interestingly, almost shockingly, he's but level par on the back nine. So Brooks keeps on saying that he's really close. He's been burning a lot of edges. And if the putts start to fall, watch out, it's going to happen early. Well, now we know why he says it's going to happen early, because obviously the front nine sets up so well for him. So I think it's through the first 7 holes, it's going to reveal itself very early on. And if he goes on a run, if he does what he is very much capable of doing, it's going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on the other two guys. You could see a tie atop the leaderboard. You could see it flop around. You could see a playoff. It is that significant.
All right. One last guy. Chez Reavie, who I've seen play, and I know he's been involved in a couple of tournaments, hasn't been a guy who grabs a lot of headlines, but played very well yesterday, shooting the 68 and throwing himself into the mix. He's got to play with Koepka and is one of those newbies like Gary Woodland, who's never won before. What does Chez Reavie have to do on a day like today to not only make up 4 strokes, but combat some of the biggest guys on tour?
Yeah, and he's not the biggest guy on tour. That's why it's so distinctive with what Chez is doing. And he might be 5'7". I don't know what his listed weight is because he's a little bit heavy as well. But he can pump the ball out there, plays pretty well. But, you know, he's fighting beyond his weight class. There's no doubt about that. So when you look at Chez, even though he's starting today the same position as Brooks, with Brooks' pedigree and what we know he's capable of, okay, well, Chez Reavie, we know that if he's going to overtake the top starting 4 strokes behind, let's say those guys play even par, maybe even 1 under at the top of the leaderboard, that means that Chez is looking at having to shoot better than a 67 to have a chance. That is a massive ask for anybody. Yes, for the likes of Brooks Koepka too, in fairness, but for Chez Reavie that hasn't been there before, it gets to be even a bigger ask. So I think the hill's steeper for him.
Fair enough. And then we're a couple weeks down the road, come back for the 4th and final, which is now, of course, the Open, which we're supposed to call it. I still call it the British. Sorry, golf fanatics. But that's just me. Yeah, that's what I grew up saying, so I'll continue to say it. Usually PGA, the 4th and final, but they moved it up this year. So it does change the way we look at overall the way that it lays out. Some people consider the Open the biggest of them because it's the birthplace of golf and the like. Number one, where are we playing this year? Number two, do you agree or disagree that because of the new format and the moving of the PGA, it does change the way we look at the British Open a little bit?
Well, I'll start with answering it backwards, because the moving of the PGA Championship from August to May, and this is our first year of the new, what they're calling, condensed schedule, more or less. The fact that the PGA is in between the Masters and the U.S. Open is great for the PGA Championship. I think it's great for us as golf fans, because we go the Players in March, then we have the Masters in April, with the PGA in May, the U.S. Open in June, and then we finish with the Open in July, and then we have the FedEx Cup playoffs. From a golf fan's perspective, every month has its own big event that you're dealing with along the way. I still think, in fairness, though, that the PGA Championship is the 4th of the 4 majors.
Yep.
You've got the Masters, which is the Masters. I mean, there's not even any arguing that. That's the one that people look forward to the most, because we've waited months and months and months through a cold winter for some from golf, and we break out at Augusta National. When it comes to the U.S. Open, it's the national championship. Really, enough said. When it comes to the Open, it's the world's championship. And as you duly noted, it was the first major. So it stands alone. So that leaves us with the PGA Championship. And I look at it and go, okay, so all right, admit it. It's the 4th of the 4th. But is 4 of 4 that bad when you're talking about the 4 major championships? I don't think it's bad company to be keeping, and that's fine. Does it help it that it's in May? Absolutely, it helps it in May, but I don't think it changes its status as compared to the other 3. Now, to the last of those 4 now, the Open, it's going to be played at Royal Portrush. Royal Portrush is in Northern Ireland. It's the first time that the Open has returned to Northern Ireland since 1951. Same golf course. They've done some touch-up. couple of new holes. It's going to sell out. I don't know whether that's official news yet. If I'm, you know, for in the golf nerdy world, maybe that's breaking news, but it will sell out. That's how popular this Open is coming back to Northern Ireland and all those coming up from the Republic of Ireland as well. The excitement level is absolutely massive. So really exciting that the year is building up to the final major championship, being at a new place and keeping with your theme of newbies since 1951. And it's got some new holes and all the rest to go along with it. It's a really cool season so far.
And if memory serves, President's Cup this year, and is it up here in the Northeast in Jersey?
No, it's in Australia, actually. And it's not until the wintertime. It's not going to be until the very end of the year. So it kind of elongates the year from that standpoint, too, that we're talking about the holiday season, and you and I will probably be talking about golf again. Are you kidding me? In the middle of all the rest going on?
That works for me, and we'll be talking about the rest of the show as well. Matt Adams, whenever we talk golf, we always call you up. If we can keep the connection going, it's a good thing.
Next, I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk next, I'm sure, from Northern Ireland.
Yes, we will. Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks, bud.
See ya.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.